Okay, think about this. More than half the actual structure in some of the newest airliners, like the Boeing 787 or the Airbus A350, it's made of composite
A
materials.
huge proportion.
Which means it's not just a minor detail. Being able to repair those composite parts reliably, quickly, perfectly, really, that's become absolutely essential for keeping modern planes flying.
It really has. It's the hidden work, you know, the stuff that keeps these super light, efficient planes in the air. Nick McDonald over at Evans Composites, he called it the unsung backbone of the aviation industry.
That's a great way to put it. So today, our mission is to really dive deep into that world, the complex, pretty high-stakes field of aviation composite repair.
And the stakes are definitely high. It's not just safety, although that's obviously paramount. Sunny Merchandani at HA Eco Composite Services really emphasizes that good repair strategies are crucial for long-term sustainability now.
How so? Sustainability.
Well, think about it. Good repairs cut costs, they minimize the time planes are stuck on the ground, and they actually extend the usable life of these expensive structures.
What?
It basically makes the economics of flying these advanced planes work. Merchandani calls it a critical enabler.
Okay, got it. So today we're going to try and unpack the specific techniques, you know, things like scarfing and patching. We'll look at the really tough challenges, like working on tricky, curved surfaces, maybe far away from a clean workshop. And then we'll get into the cutting-edge tech that's transforming this whole field from something very hands-on, almost a craft,
Right, very manual.
into something much more driven by data, by science. So if you want a crash course in how these lightweight giants are kept safely in the sky, stick around.
Let's do it.
Right, let's start at the beginning. When a composite part gets damaged, what are the repair technicians actually trying to achieve? What's the goal?
Fundamentally, it boiled down to three things. You need to restore the original structural performance, number one. Then you need to get back the necessary aerodynamic smoothness.
Ah, okay.
And crucially, everything has to meet safety certification standards. Now, repairs aren't all the same. They fall on a spectrum. Experts like Nick Weber from ExecuJet MRO Services often start by talking about cosmetic repairs.
Right, those are the simple ones, like surface scratches, paint chips, maybe a bit of minor erosion, stuff that looks bad but doesn't actually weaken the part.
Exactly. It doesn't compromise the underlying structure.
Mm.
But as soon as the damage is structural, things get more complex right away. Kyle Shoemaker from Kultala Aerospace points to two main methods here, the scarf repair and the patch repair.
Okay, the scarf repair, that's often seen as the sort of the best practice, isn't it? Where you carefully remove the damaged layers, taper the
Yeah,
edges,
you create a slope.
and then you build it back up with new material, layer by layer, to match the original design precisely. Sounds very thorough.
It is. And the reason it's preferred often is because it restores both the structural integrity and that original smooth aerodynamic shape. The alternative is the patch repair that can be bolted on or sometimes bonded on. Basically, you're adding a patch, maybe composite, maybe metallic, right over the damaged spot.
Okay, that sounds quicker, maybe easier, but probably not as good for airflow, right?
Generally, yeah,
Huh.
it could disrupt the airflow more.
So why choose a patch if the scarf is structurally better? Is it just speed?
Speed is a big factor, yeah.
Yeah.
And sometimes the application. A patch gives you strength quickly. It might be okay for a temporary fix or maybe in an area where the aerodynamics aren't quite as critical. But for those primary load-bearing structures, you really want the scarf repair if possible.
Okay. Now, thinking about how these repairs are actually done, the materials involved, that depends a lot on where the work happens, right? Field versus shop.
Absolutely. And that leads us to techniques like wet layup, which you often see used out in the field.
Right, how does that work?
Well, Patrick Meyer from STS Aviation Services describes it pretty clearly. The technician takes dry fiber material, could be fiberglass, could be carbon fiber, and basically saturates it with liquid resin right there on the spot.
Okay.
Then they layer it onto the repair area and cure it, making sure conditions like temperature are controlled as much as possible. Francois Fermeau at Valair mentions it's practical for, you know, less structurally critical fixes or quick repairs done on the aircraft. Things like filling a small hole with a flush plug patch or injecting resin into a delamination.
So wet layup has its place. It's useful. But if you're dealing with a really critical part, like a primary wing structure or something, you probably need something with more precision, more consistency.
Exactly right. And that's where pre-preg materials come in. Pre-preg just means the fabric is pre-impregnated with a very precise amount of resin when it's manufactured.
Ah, so it's controlled in the factory.
Precisely. Because that resin to fiber ratio is perfectly controlled, you get much greater consistency and usually higher strength compared to a wet layup done in the field.
I bet that factory precision comes with some strings attached, though. You probably can't just slap it out on the tarmac.
No, definitely not. Sunny Merchandani confirms this pre-preg repairs demand really strict control over temperature and pressure during the curing process. Often that means using an autoclave.
The big oven, basically.
Yeah, a pressurized oven. Or, for more localized repairs, portable heat blankets can be used. But it's a much more controlled process. And one other key technique we have to mention is core replacement.
Ah, for things like honeycomb structures inside.
Exactly. If you have damaged that internal honeycomb or foam core, maybe it's crushed or moisture got in, you have to replace that core material. Patrick Meyer stresses that using vacuum bagging is critical here, and also with wet layup repairs, actually.
Vacuum bagging? To suck out the air?
Yeah, essentially. It applies pressure evenly, squeezes out any trapped air bubbles or excess resin. This ensures a really solid bond and helps restore the component's original strength and stiffness. Super important step.
Okay, so we have the materials, we understand the main techniques like scarfing, patching, wet layup, pre-preg, core replacement. But here's where it seems really challenging. Actually doing this detailed work, often not in a clean lab, but out in the real world, maybe on a huge part that you can't just take off the plane.
That in-situ challenge, repairing something while it's still installed on the aircraft, is massive. Patrick Meyer really highlights this. Imagine trying to do a complex, layered structural repair on a large fuselage section or a wing skin without removing it. You're fighting gravity. You're fighting the environment.
Yeah, I mean, trying to do that kind of precise layering and bonding while dealing with dust or fluctuating temperatures, humidity. It sounds like a recipe for, well, potential problems down the line. Quality control must be a nightmare.
It's incredibly difficult. And Nick Weber agrees complex shapes add another layer of difficulty. Think about curved winglets or engine nacelles or those nose radomes.
Yeah, nothing's flat.
Exactly. Getting the fiber orientation just right, making sure your vacuum bag seals perfectly over those curves. It takes immense skill and care.
Francois Fermeau's team at Valair, they deal with this daily. He outlined some really specific, kind of gritty problems they face. Can you give us an example?
Sure. Think about just basic physics.
Yeah.
Gravity. He mentioned how tough it is to repair damage on the underside of a control surface, like a flap or an elevator.
Oh, right. Upside down.
Exactly. You're trying to apply patches, resins, vacuum bags, and everything wants to peel off or drip down. It makes getting a good bond really challenging.
Wow, yeah. You don't normally think about gravity being the enemy in aircraft maintenance.
Right. Another issue Fermeau raised is simply the shape of the part. If it's not flat like a belly fairing panel or a radome, you often have to remove the part from the aircraft.
Why is that?
Because you need to use specialized tooling, like molds, to support the part and ensure the repair cures in the correct shape. You can't easily do that while it's still attached. And finally, he mentioned engine nacelle parts.
High stress area.
Very high stress. Plus heat, vibration, potential impacts. Because they operate in such a demanding environment, damage there almost always means removing the part for a really thorough inspection and repair back in the shop. You can't risk cutting corners.
It really paints a picture. Composite repair isn't just like banging out a dent in a metal panel. It requires this deep technical knowledge, incredible precision, and strict environmental control.
Absolutely. Patrick Meyer makes a crucial point here. Unlike metalwork, where a bad weld might be obvious, mistakes in composite repair, like tiny voids inside or poor layer adhesion, can be completely invisible.
Hidden dangers.
Exactly. They might only cause a failure much later under stress. That's why the investment in specialized tools and, perhaps most importantly, rigorous technician training is just non-negotiable.
Okay, so given those really significant challenges, especially doing repairs in situ, detecting hidden damage, dealing with complex shapes, how is the industry trying to make this process more reliable, more scientific, moving it away from being just a manual craft?
A big part of it starts with getting better eyes on the problem, better inspection. Francois Fermeau notes that over the last, say, 5 years, MROs have really ramped up their use of advanced non-destructive testing methods, NDT.
So moving beyond just tapping it and listening, the old tap test.
Yeah, exactly. Moving beyond just visual checks and tap tests, they're increasingly using things like thermographic inspection, which uses heat signatures, or ultrasonic inspection.
What do those methods give you that the old ways didn't? How are they better?
They let you see inside the composite layers. Ultrasonics, for instance, sends sound waves through the material. By analyzing how those waves bounce back, Technicians can detect things like delamination layers separating or tiny impact cracks between the plies that you'd never ever spot just by looking.
Ah, okay, so you get a much clearer map of the actual damage.
Precisely. A clear, accurate map. This means they can be much more precise about removing only the damaged material, and it helps verify the quality of the repair afterwards. It's a huge leap in accuracy.
That improvement in inspection accuracy sounds like it sets the stage perfectly for the next big shift, bringing in digital technology. We're hearing a lot about AI, artificial intelligence, and machine learning, ML, getting involved now.
Yes, and Sunny Merchandani talks about the enormous potential here. AI algorithms can be trained to analyze those NDT images, the ultrasonic scans, for example.
To spot the damage automatically.
Yeah, and not just spot it, but characterize it. Differentiate between, say, minor porosity and a critical crack network, potentially more consistently than the human eye can over time. And then ML algorithms can crunch data from thousands of past repairs.
To learn what works best.
Exactly. To analyze what repair strategies were most successful for specific types of damage, potentially even predicting how a repair will behave under different stresses over its lifetime. It promises much more refined, reliable repair processes.
That sounds incredible, like truly transformative for consistency and maybe even speed. But you flagged a potential roadblock earlier, getting access to all that data.
That's the rub. It's a major friction point right now. For AI and ML to work really well, they need massive amounts of high-quality data covering a huge range of repair scenarios, materials, aircraft types.
Makes sense. The more it sees, the smarter it gets.
Right. But here's the problem. The specific techniques, the performance data, the lessons learned from composite repairs, MROs and the aircraft manufacturers, the OEMs, often guard that information very closely. It's seen as a competitive advantage, as valuable intellectual property, or IP.
Ah, so the technology is basically there, or getting there fast, but the willingness to share the data needed to train it properly is lagging behind because of business competition.
That's a pretty good summary of the tension, yes. It really requires a new level of collaboration across the industry, MROs, airlines, OEMs, to build those shared databases that would truly unlock AI's full potential here.
Interesting dynamic. But even while that plays out, other digital tools are already making a difference on the ground, right?
Oh, definitely. Mickey McDonald mentioned the impact of adopting modern digital platforms, things like cloud-based ERP systems, enterprise resource planning.
How does that help a technician fixing a wing?
It gives them instant access to everything they need, right there on a tablet, perhaps. Repair manuals, specific procedures for that aircraft part, the component's history, past inspection results.
Yeah.
It's all accessible right where they're working, saving a ton of time compared to searching through paper manuals or going back to a terminal.
So faster access to the right information. And I guess it also helps with tracking the repair itself.
Hugely important. That leads into the idea of the digital twin, which Merchandani talks about. These cloud platforms store complete history for each component, every inspection, every repair.
Like a lifelong medical record for the part.
Exactly. Combined with digital twin technology, a virtual model of the physical part operators can simulate how that specific component, with its unique history, might perform in the future. It enables predictive maintenance, anticipating potential issues before they become critical. And Nick Weber adds that this digital traceability is great for quality assurance, too. OEMs or regulators can remotely verify that a repair was done correctly, meeting all the required standards.
And one more piece of tech, 3D printing. Is that playing a role?
It's starting to. Nick McDonald highlighted the development of complex composite 3D printing. The idea is to be able to quickly produce certain tools, jigs, or even some non-structural components that might be hard to source otherwise. Potentially cheaper, faster, and sometimes even more durable than the original part. It's still evolving, but definitely an area to watch.
Wow. Okay, so this deep dive really hammers home the point. The basic goal of composite repair might sound simple, just restore the structure, but actually doing it requires this incredible mix of skill, precision, technology, and rigorous process.
Absolutely. Francois Fremeau actually made a great point. He said composite repair isn't inherently difficult in the sense of being impossible, but it is incredibly demanding. It demands that the technician follows every single step of the process. The material prep, the precise layering, the controlled curing, the thorough inspection absolutely perfectly, without any deviation.
No shortcuts allowed.
No shortcuts.
Yeah.
But, he stressed, if that process is followed meticulously, the resulting repair can absolutely meet and sometimes even exceed the strength and durability of the original undamaged structure.
That's reassuring. And ultimately, as composites become even more dominant in aircraft design, that capability becomes even more crucial.
Without a doubt. Which brings us back to Nick Weber's core message. Airlines and operators must make sure they're partnering with MRO providers who genuinely treat composite repair as a core competency, not just something they dabble in. They need the right facilities, the right equipment, the proper OEM approvals, and most importantly, highly skilled, well-trained technicians. It's just not a niche skill anymore.
It's foundational. We've traced this fascinating evolution, really, from what was a very hands-on, almost artisanal craft towards a highly precise data-driven science boosted by things like advanced NDT, AI, and digital records.
Mm-hmm.
So here's a final thought for you, our listeners, to chew on. If the future of making composite repairs even safer and more reliable hinges on these AI algorithms learning from vast amounts of data about past repairs, successes, and failures, but the very MROs and OEMs who hold that data are reluctant to share it because it's considered competitive IP, what kind of friction might that create? How might that tension between technological potential and business reality impact the speed, costs, and overall reliability of aircraft maintenance globally in the coming decade? Something to think about.